There's been babies born as well. But this year we've also had some funerals. And so I was thinking back over the last year, and I think since this time last year, Headingtons, Grabers, Geary's, anybody else that I'm missing that got married? So I saw a hand back there. Not since last year, right? You guys were married before that. Yeah, that's good. And then along the way, I missed somebody. I heard mumbles. If I missed you, I'm sorry. We've had some funerals as well. Last December, we had a funeral for Steve's wife. And along the way, we've had a funeral for Beth's grandpa and Drew Slevin, who's now moved away, but his dad passed away. And then I think we all remember going through last Easter and Kyle, who we baptized on Easter Sunday and buried him 9 days later. I think in the last year, I've probably cried more than I have in my entire life, just with stuff coming up and stuff happening. And there's been some good things and times to celebrate, but there's also been some times of real hard, real hard. And along the way, we've said hello to some of you. Some of you weren't here a year ago and were excited. Hi. And then some of you, and we've said goodbye to some really dear friends over the last year. Some of them are people that were just a part of the church in the very beginning. I think of the Ganshaws who moved away. They were part in the very beginning, and I miss them. And then we said goodbye to Dave, and we said goodbye to Eric. And for all of us, we shed a lot of tears over those. But we've also been excited. We've done Suppers for Six, I think twice now. And we've met new friends, and it's good. But life is always like that, right? Like, it's both bitter and sweet at the same time. It's hard to say goodbye to people, and it's exciting to say hello, and it's always both at the same time. And in the middle of all that, we celebrated our 5-year anniversary, and we feel so grown up about that. And I didn't know what to say about that one at all. And then I'll just tell you my own personal stuff. It's been a really hard year. On top of all that stuff, a good friend of ours died about a year ago. I can't remember. It was September, wasn't it? October? September. A good friend of ours died, our neighbor. And that was really, really hard. And our whole family cried. And in January, my pastor, my mentor, he died in January. And I went out and spoke at his funeral. And I've walked through the dark valleys of divorce this year like I've never walked through before. Not my own. it's just been hard. There's been a lot of hard things to process. I was at a retreat not too long ago, and I was recapping like just the last quarter for somebody. And I'm like, you know, oftentimes in life, we just get moving so fast, and we don't stop and think about what has been and to pay attention to the emotional toll and to actually force myself to go through the process of like talking about it. Whew, it's been a lot. And so there's been the bitter and my own stuff, but there's also been the good. And I'll tell you, like, we are in such the golden years of parenting. It's just, we still have like 3 months left of no teenager, or 6 months left of no teenager. Almost everybody ties their own shoes now. If you give them enough time, everybody ties their own shoes. It's just not worth it most of the time. I was just saying yesterday, I told Jennifer yesterday, we were out at my parents' house in the pool, and it was just our family there. My siblings weren't there. And the boys had set up a basketball hoop, and I was working on slides and stuff. And then finally, I got in with them, and we started playing basketball, which I don't know how you play pool basketball. For us, it's just kind of wrestling in the pool with a ball. And so Maddox and I took the brothers to task in the pool basketball court. And I think we all have scratches and bruises after it was all over. But laughing and just having so much fun. And I got out of the pool, and I told Jennifer, like, this is like the dream world of all boys right here. Just playing as hard as we can and crying and then bucking up and playing some more and punching your brothers in the face. And it's, oh man, I love it. It's so good. There's a sweetness to life now too. And then there's been this with the ominous black clouds. Some of you sat through town hall a couple weeks ago where we talked about this. And a year ago, I stood before you and said, we don't know what's happening. We know our lease is running out in October of 2013, and we don't know what we're doing, and our landlord hasn't really worked with us on a price, and the price he wants, we just simply can't afford, and talking about mission in the community, and we've just, and so I'm working on this week even, and feeling the weight of that even still hanging over us, even still this week. And so at leadership team not too long ago, I said, so if I had to do a word on Vision Sunday, what are the words that come to mind? And bittersweet was one of those. But then I think, I can't remember who it was, somebody said, used this phrase of nomads and wanderers, that we feel like we're nomads and wanderers, that we've never had a place called home, even though we're 5 years into this thing, that we were in a basement, and then we were at the gateway, and we always knew the gateway wouldn't be home, and then we moved up here and had hopes that this might be home, and yet there's been this unsettling feeling over the last couple years that I just don't know how we're going to make this work. I should have said the bitter and the sweet of this building, too, is that it's beautiful in here. Well, you feel the bitter right now, don't you? I don't know that bitter's quite the word I'd use for it. And then there's mold all over the building as well, and it leaks like a sieve when it rains. So we really talked for a while about how we identify with that part in the story of God's people where God calls Abram and says, I'm going to take you to a land and I'm going to do a thing. You just need to go. And so Abram goes and he goes to the land and eventually they find themselves in Egypt and they just keep wandering and they never have that sense of this is our place, this is where it's supposed to be. And yet in the middle of that, in the middle of wandering, and then they wander around the 40 years of the desert, but in the middle of wandering, they're called to faithfulness. That just because you're a nomad, just because you're wandering, doesn't give you an excuse to just kind of, we're on vacation, eat whatever you want. But being a pilgrim, being a nomad and a wanderer, you still have responsibilities, and there's still a work that God wants to do in you right where you are. Wherever you are, that's where God wants to do a work in you. And so we've had that sense as well. And so last year when we talked, we introduced you to the Venn diagram, because I think in Venn diagrams most of the days. And we talked about mission, community, and formation. And I just wanted to point out to you real quickly before we go on this morning that we've tweaked this diagram just a little bit, because what I said to you last year when we talked about this and what I say about it when we talk in Imago Story is that we believe a church is where we do mission and we are a community and that we do formation stuff so that we can get to that sweet overlap in the middle that I had no name for. And we talked about it more, and Vicky's the one that's really pushed me all year to say, maybe that middle is really what we're talking about, that as the church, our goal is to do spiritual formation. That is the goal. And so what we're really talking about in that green area is not just spiritual formation, but specifically spiritual practices. That it's singing together and giving and serving and sitting in Sunday school classes and small groups. It's all those things that are the other piece. And so it's when we do mission and community and spiritual practice together that we're formed into the image of Christ. And you hear us talk about that a lot, and we're really still very passionate about it. And now I just want to give you just a second. Study this diagram very closely, all right? There's no, like, secret messages. It's not one of those stereograms. The rest of this morning, that diagram is going to keep popping up on the screen. And as I talk about different things, we're just going to highlight the sections of this that it really hits, of the different ministries. And so you just have to remember that blue is mission, orange is community, green is spiritual practices. I kept forgetting while I was building the slides, so good luck. So as we've gone in this, what we're going to do this morning is just spend some time talking about, as nomads and wanderers, as we've been working through this, how have we done our best to be faithful? And so what we're going to do, if you're new with us, this is how this works, is, microphone. We're going to have lots of people get up this morning, and I've asked them all to do short reports for you. And this is the kind of thing where if you want to cheer, you can cheer. Let's not boo and hiss. That seems not kind. But if you want to celebrate and cheer and get excited about what we're doing and what we're excited about, we welcome you to do that. And so this morning, as we talk about giving, Kevin Slutton, my friend, and the person who oversees the resource team in the church and does all this, he's going to talk about giving. And so I'll hand the mic over to Kevin.
Thank you.
Just swipe.
How do I do this? Here, let's practice. This isn't going well. Okay, there we go. Giving this year was $343,000, which is up 8.7% over fiscal year 2012. And what I find more amazing is that it's 154 giving units. So in this room, every week, we have about 170 to 190 people in this room every week. So most people are couples. So divide that in half. Maybe 100 individual families or giving units is kind of our average. And yet in the past 12 months or last fiscal year, we had 154 families give to our church. I mean, I think what's amazing to me about that is that you guys really take the fact that everything is spiritual seriously. And that's amazing to me. So you're awesome. And as you give, because I know a lot of people, when they give to a church, they say, okay, I want to give to a church, but then I want to give to the poor, and I want to help people in other ways. And one of the cool things about how we've set up Imago is that the first dollar, or the first 10 cents of every dollar, whatever, 10% of everything that you give goes out the door to serve the poor. It goes out the door to serve people not in this room, not in this building. And so first fruits is what we call that first 10%. So money comes in, 10% goes into this first fruits fund. And out of that fund this year, we spent $35,000 serving the poor. So between the breakfast and being really intentional with a few people, and just lots of different ways we've helped people in the neighborhood, we spent $35,000. We helped to build a couple of wells in Honduras this year, I think, wasn't it?
I can't remember.
I don't know. But we built some wells, so people are drinking clean water. And that was $6,000 given by you folks at a special offering in December. And then the Honduras team raised $42,000, or that's what the Honduras team raised plus what the church has kicked in. So we spent $42,000 this year on the people of Honduras. So very, very proud of what we do on helping people outside of our walls. Finally, if you're new to our church, let us introduce you to the most ridiculous accounting system ever. We didn't have an accountant on our team when we started this church, and we came up with a bucket system. So here it goes. The buckets, we have four buckets, and I'm just going to throw them all up there. So the four buckets that we have, when your dollar comes in, it gets split four ways. It goes into first fruits, which we talked about, facilities and equipment, which is the building, paying the bills.
Okay, I'm just going to say, I built the slides, and for those of you that are mathematicians, the percentages don't add up. I just realized that. I put the wrong percentages in.
I missed that, too.
Sorry.
Okay, so they're roughly what you see on the screen. And the way that we do this is that as we see a need in one of the buckets, we'll change the percentages so that the new dollars coming in might fill in a bucket that's getting low, or if we're gearing up for something, for example, you'll see the facilities and equipment. We have quite a stash there, and that's in preparation of moving or doing something here or whatever we were going to do. So we have built up some money there. And then ministry and operations and staff, it's 62 now, isn't it?
No, it's 59. Ministry is 12.
Ministry is 12. Okay. Yeah. So between ministry and operations and staff, that all goes to serve this body. So what is that? 71%. Yeah, you're in good hands. 71% of... 71% of our budget goes to serve the people in this place, and we feel really good about that number. So, finally, there is every once in a while we do get special gifts that aren't just general giving; they're a large gift, and we've been kind of stashing that in a bucket we called board designated. Actually, Kyle, our accountant, made us call it board designated budget. So that's also in preparation for what we're going to do next, which I'm sure Charlie will talk about.
Sure, I will. Thank you. We try so hard to be grown up, and then we screw it up. So I want to say, one of the things I really love about our church on my professional level is that I don't have to do hardly anything with the money, and they take care of, except for spend it. I do most of the spending, I guess, but they just do such a great job of putting it together and making sure that we're doing the right things, and I just, huge props to that team. One of the other areas of being faithful is music, and I know that music is a big deal for many of you. Zach, start coming up here. I asked people this week to give me a quotes, and if you got in here before service, you saw what different people say about our church. I wanted to pull two out about the music because they're true, and the one is, I love how talented and diverse our worship leaders are. In the same week, we'll have hymns, mainstream songs, and music that we wrote, which I love about our music. I got to tell you, when I talk to other pastors outside of our area, and I tell them about what our musicians are able to do, they're envious, and many of them are in churches much bigger than ours, and we're just very, very blessed to have the musicians we do. And then this is my favorite quote, quote of the day. My family's at Mago, we keep it real. What keeps me coming back to see how awkward our worship leaders can make it, i.e. pregnant pauses, baby wearing, extended guitar tuning, tank tops.
I wish I was wearing a tank top right now.
I didn't write it either.
I wrote both of those quotes. Just kidding. So I'm going to split what I say about the music into two parts, looking back and looking ahead. Looking back over the last year, we've done a lot of things that I'm excited about. We've got, we did some recording. We have written a lot more new songs. For a long time, I think a long time, we had basically one or two obscure songs that Jeff wrote, and Doubter's Prayer that Dave wrote, and that was it. And now we've got a whole, we could do like probably two or maybe three consecutive weeks of all original material, which I think is really exciting.
I love that.
So that's what we've been doing. We've been writing. We've got, it's not just the worship leaders who are writing, but we've got, I was just talking today with one of our musicians who has been working on a couple of songs, and we're going to try to bring those in this fall. So that's exciting. We've also had a big punch to the gut, the music ministry has, when Dave left, because he was our fearless leader. He was the one who really started pushing us to write music and kind of focused the difficult-to-focus attentions of the worship leaders, if that makes sense. And when he left, I was thinking, oh, crap. Or some version of that, and what it turned out was that he had set things up so that Jeff and myself and Allie, who were the three worship leaders, left, and then we pulled in Danny Suter to fill that fourth spot. We were able to kind of just run things by committee, and that's how it's going, and it's going well. So that's kind of the looking back portion. I'm excited about where we've come. It's fun as a musician. It's fun to be a part of this. We've seen people come, which is exciting. Seen people go, which is sad. But it's a great thing to be a part of. And looking ahead, we are going to continue writing. We actually had a songwriting retreat, which was just a morning in Charlie's office with a number of people. But we were looking at the upcoming series on the writings of Peter together, talking about them, arguing about them, and trying to come up with some ideas that we could maybe put into songs to pair with the teaching. And I think that is really cool because I think the music is just as an important part of what we do here as the teaching. It's different, and it speaks to people differently. Like Steve preached about how music can be spiritual or is spiritual. So I'm excited about that going forward. We're looking to tie the teaching and the music together even tighter. And just, I want to say in general, my personal experience has been that when I go to a new church, it's really easy to get connected if I start playing in the band. And because I play instruments and sing, that's what I've done. That's kind of my default for getting connected to church. And I want to extend the invitation to anybody out there who is a musician, to talk to me if you'd like to get involved, because I want to try to find room for you to be a part of what we're doing if you want to be a part of it. So don't think that we're set. We don't need anybody else. And don't think that we just need drummers, although we do. If you want to be involved, let me know or talk to Charlie or Dustin, and they'll filter you towards me. And I'd like to get you involved as well if you want to be. So that's really all I have to say.
Great. Well, all the musicians, if you serve in any of the bands, will you just stand up and we'll show them our appreciation for all that they do. Real quick, I'm just going to do this one really fast. A year ago, we started doing the lectionary every Sunday morning, and I really want to say this for those of you that are newer. One of the things that we love, the reason I've really come to love the lectionary, we don't teach the lectionary passage every week, but we still read it every week, and that might feel disjointed to you, but the idea of the lectionary is that every 3 years, if you keep doing it every Sunday, in our context, reading the gospel every week, by the time you get through 3 years, you've read all of the Gospels in our setting. And I just think that's really important. It's an important discipline to make sure we keep reading all of Scripture and not just the ones that we like and the ones that puzzle us and challenge us to keep reading them. And it's a great way to get us, to get everybody involved. And so I get this question all the time about who can read Scripture and what's the silly necklace for. And so I'm just going to say again, the idea of Scripture is that when I get up here and talk on a Sunday morning, I'm telling you what I think Scripture says. But when we read the Scripture, that's just what it says. And in that, it doesn't matter who reads it. It just doesn't matter who reads it. We're reading what Scripture say. And this cross is a reminder of that. This cross, you may see somebody up there and you might say, well, I know this about them and this thing and that they did and all that. And what we're saying when we put on the cross in a very humble way is that it doesn't matter. That God loves us, and that those are His words, not ours anyway. And so that's why we do the cross every week, and I just want to reiterate that because people ask me sometimes, especially as they're new and they come in. Over the last year, I've taught a lot of stuff, and I thought about doing this section by tell me you're the most memorable teachings, but then I figured that would probably just hurt my feelings. So this is just a summary of the things we've taught over the last year. We did the Apostles' Creed series last fall, and then... that was fun for me. I'm just going to tell you the ones I liked. That was fun just to work through all that. Then at Advent, we did one we called the Prince of Shalom, where we talked about names of Jesus, and we did that cool art display up on there. And then for Lent last year, I really loved the No God But God series, where we worked backwards through the Ten Commandments until we arrived at Good Friday on There Is No God But God. And for those of you that were here, that moment of having the cross in the dark room and having Joe send a nail across the room because he missed the head, which I'm always going to remind him of because that's fun. But it was such a powerful moment. And those of you that are new, that's what that cross is in the front porch there that has the Ten Commandments on it that are nailed on. And people came up and nailed a nail into the sin that they felt God was calling them to face. And so I get goosebumps. That was really powerful. And then out of Easter, we worked on our five directives in honor of our five-year anniversary. And then this summer, if you've been around, we've worked on a series on St. Peter that I thought was going to be kind of a filler for the summer, and somehow it took a turn and got really intense. And so then the last couple weeks you've been here, we've been finishing up a series here. And I just want to point, you can tell where I did the series graphics up there. one of these things is not like the other. And then Dave did the Prince of Shalom and the No Gods But God. But then since then, Jeff Hopkins is the one that does our series graphics. And Dwork Shells, I said this in one service and it wasn't the one you were in. Dwork Shells Silverstein into a series graphic for a church. All praise goes to Jeff Hopkins for awesome series graphics. Those are... And this fall, starting next week, we're going to go to the writings of St. Peter, which he took that same graphic and then changed it just a little bit, but same color scheme, and it ties to that, and but a new thing, and it's just great. This year in January, we hired Jesse Agin on our staff to oversee Genesis. What had happened, Beth was holding the fort down, and we just got to where what we needed was just more hours than Beth had in her life. And so we started looking for somebody on a much more, just more, like more than double the hours. And so we, after doing a search and interviewing some people, we ended up hiring Jesse. Jesse is on a cruise this morning, and so she couldn't be here. So I asked her to talk about new curriculum, so she shot a video for us. I'm just going to tell you up front, for the first minute, some of you are going to have to look away, all right? Because the audio and the video don't sync up, all right? I don't know what else you were thinking, but just ignore that. This is Jesse. I'll hail from the region.
Hey, Imago. First of all, I want to say I'm super blessed to have this position at the church. I love my job so much, and I care about the spiritual development of the kids at Imago. And I also want to say thank you so much to all the volunteers for all the time and energy that you put into the spiritual development of the kids at church. I just really quickly wanted to fill you in on fill you in on the new curriculum for Genesis and why we felt we needed a new curriculum. I would probably go out on a limb and say that a majority of curriculums that are made for children's ministry today are virtue-based, such as teaching things such as being honest, trustworthy, being a good friend, telling the truth. That's the same as being honest, but okay, whatever. These are all great things, but I'm not sure that that is specifically what we want to teach our kids during the service. A lot of people that are brought up in this type of curriculum, Sunday school class, I can't talk. They grow up and they realize that they're tired of following these rules. They're tired of just going by these guidelines and being good. And then they end up walking away from their faith. What I like about the new curriculum, which is called True, is that it focuses on the big God story. It aims to show God in every story as the main character. So what was God doing here through Daniel? Or what was God doing through David? So it shows God as the main character. I love that. True is put out by David C. Cook. They also provide a resource that I absolutely love that we hand out each week to the kids. It's called Homefront Weekly. And it is a resource for parents so that they can sit down with their kids during the week and look at the lesson, look at the subject of the lesson that's going to be taught the next Sunday. So it's given to the families a week prior to when it is going to be taught. I love that because it prepares the parents, it helps train the parents to become the main spiritual leaders of their children. And then that allows the church to come alongside them and help them out as a resource instead of the church being the main responsible party for the spiritual growth of the children. So that's what I love about this curriculum. It aims to train the parents, and there are also training classes and things like that. It aims to train the parents to be the main spiritual leaders of their children. So that is basically it. I love the new curriculum. I love my job. And now I'm going to go lay at the pool on my cruise ship and read James Patterson. Bye.
She's not here. Would all the Genesis volunteers please stand up, and we'll show them our appreciation for all the work that they do. All of you, go up. As I interact with people outside of our walls, I think one of the things that I'll tell you the thing that people remark on the most about our church, there's two things always that people talk about when it comes to our church. And I'm assuming this is your experience as well. If they visited, the fact that we talk back during service, that's the one that gets mentioned. But I think even more than that, the Breakfast Club gets mentioned and the work that they do. And Eric has taken us just miles down the road last year, and they're still doing a great job. And Kyle Enders is going to come up and give you just a quick report on kind of what's happening and where they're going. But I just, this picture for me just summarizes beyond breakfast. This picture gets at what we're trying to accomplish with Breakfast Club on Sunday mornings. Christina telling Dustin how to play chess so he can win. So that was actually just this morning. I took that and threw it in there. So Kyle, will you come and give us a report on Breakfast Club and what you have going and what's doing and all that stuff. And I'm losing battery. I'm on a red, Brian, on the handheld. All right, go.
Hey, so I wanted to open with a joke, right, about how I've always had a tremendous amount of faith in Imago's leadership until they asked me to get up in front of everybody and represent Breakfast Club, but my lovely wife told me that was not a good idea. So thank you, Katie, for always being my guiding light. I'm shaking. This is terrifying. This is a lot of coffee this morning. Okay.
All right,
so real quick history on how breakfast started. There was a lady. She found some people down on the riverfront. They were hungry. She said, "Why are you hungry? It's Sunday morning. Aren't there places that serve breakfast?" And they said, "No, on Sunday mornings, nobody offers us a breakfast." So she started bringing sandwiches to them every Sunday morning. Imago got involved, and at one point we were serving 100 people out of the Imago office when we were back at the Gateway building, and that place was maybe built to house 50 people. It was a madhouse.
50? About eight. It was 500 square feet.
Okay. It was tight. So let's see. So we were serving breakfast out of this tiny little office. Come to present day, Eric the intern was here for the past year, and he got a couple of the veterans from the breakfast volunteers together as a leadership team, and he really pushed us to think in a completely different way about what we were doing. We read a book called When Helping Hurts. It's a tough read because there's no pictures in it, but at the same time, it really challenged us. If you do the breakfast, read it. If you're thinking about doing the breakfast, read it. It's a great read. But what's happened since we all got together is I've gotten to watch this breakfast that was about a product, just putting a hot meal in front of these people who needed it on a Sunday morning, to this process of relationships and the restoration that can bring to everybody involved. So every Sunday morning, you can find us at 7 o'clock back in Fernandes Hall. We are serving meals, but more importantly, we're just hanging out and getting to know one another and just loving one another. So it's cool for me to hear these guys talk up front about bringing the kingdom here, and that I get to witness a little piece of that every Sunday morning. You can feel it in the handshake. You can see it on everybody that's there. Did I miss anything? Talk to me after church if you want to get involved. It's amazing. I had like zero friends before I started Breakfast Club, and now I have two, and it's great. So please come and check it out. Oh, and Joan Keach would be so mad if I didn't mention we're doing a Christmas banquet. We do one every year. So if you don't feel like getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, we do have this Christmas banquet coming up on December 8th. Right, and it's in the afternoon, so you can like bake a pie in the morning or help out in some way. So I'm sure that we'll have announcements on it later.
Yes.
Stay tuned for that, but come check out the breakfast, please.
Awesome. Well, all the Breakfast Club volunteers, please stand up. There you go. I will only add one little thing, Kyle. Well done. But one of the things that I'm really excited about is we've actually entered into at least one now and looking future of an intentional relationship with a woman that we are trying to get a team of people around her to help her to move, to get out of the system that she was in and get her to a place of independence. And so that's really exciting as we work with her. So I'm going to spend almost no time with this because just a couple weeks ago, or a couple months ago now, we did a report from Honduras, but you know how much we love what we do in Honduras, and we just had a team come back in June, and they did a report, and we will be going again to Honduras, and we'll have dates for you in January, but this service is already going to go about 2 hours long, so we'll move on. What you don't know in the background is maybe you hear us talk about Sunday school classes that are coming up, and you might think that that's just a random assigning of classes, and I wouldn't fault you for that because I don't think hardly anybody in the church, but about four of us, knew that there's actually reasons why we offer the classes we offer. And we had a retreat about a month ago and thought that it might be a good idea to let you all in on what we're planning and how we think through that. And so I'll just do the first one real quick. The first one, the first part of the core curriculum is Imago Story, which is what I do. And it's your welcome to Imago. We'll tell you why we do the stuff we do. And it's in my office, and it'll start next week, and we'll run 4 weeks. And then I think what's going to be new this time is after the 4 weeks are over, I think we're going to hand you off to Dustin, and he's going to develop something. So he's going to go through Imago Story starting next week for 4 weeks and then figure out what to do after that. So, but that's Imago Story, and I'll let you go. Throw it on there. Just.
All right, so we've been working through some of the core classes and playing with them for a while, and we had a retreat to go and talk about really what should be in them and start solidifying what should be taught in some of the core classes. Because if you've been here for a while, or even if you haven't been here for a while, you probably noticed that we approach some of the questions of life a little bit differently than some of the other places that you may have gone to. And some of that requires some background of why and where are we coming from and how does this all make sense. And so we wanted to have some classes that talked about all of that. And so for people that have been going to church for like their whole lives, this may be stuff that you haven't heard before. And one big portion is this whole kingdom story. And so we've got some classes about this kingdom story. And so starting with the Old Testament, we've got one class that's starting next week. And this is the Old Testament, creation, fall, Israel. We've got one on Jesus that will go in the winter. And then early church. And so this is the background about what's going on in the Bible. How do we approach that? What does it mean? Is it a chance for everyone to get together to talk about some of those things? And so we've also got a couple more core. So on the slides, is it after that?
When you flip, it'll go.
All right. We've also got a couple more core classes that are, they're not specifically Bible-focused, but more bigger picture-focused. And we've looked at the Animate curriculum, and it's really good. And we've got two Animate core classes, and one of them is Animate Bible that will also start next week. And here is a quick intro to Animate Bible.
A lot of adults who go to church don't stick around for adult Sunday school. They're not in a Bible study. They're not in a small group. They don't come back on Wednesday nights. So Animate is our attempt to give churches a resource that's engaging, that's theologically provocative, that has a wonderful kind of aesthetic feel that pulls people in, and that ultimately catalyzes conversation in congregational settings.
It worked to start conversations about faith with all ages, which I thought was awesome. Just kind of cracked it open in a different way that was engaging and I'm, you know, entertaining. I liked the little graphics, and everyone loved the little graphics. They were funny. The visuals are so cool because they help people remember what they heard, so that when you get to the conversation after 10 minutes of watching the video, people really remember and are able to bring that back into the conversation.
The response that we had from Animate Faith was overwhelming. So we decided to make another Animate course, and this one's on the Bible, and it's using a lineup just as stellar as Animate Faith.
What I'm really hopeful that this will do is to sort of take down all those barriers and have people just jump in and engage in conversation about the Bible and how it was put together and how we can use it in ways that are meaningful. It's proved to be a remarkably accessible way for us to have really deep conversations together about faith. I think that why it's so attractive is it's coming at it from a fresh perspective, from a fresh road that nobody sees. And that is hard to find.
All right, and so that was Animate Bible. There's also an Animate Faith, and these are the two that are not necessarily put together by the people of this church, because a lot of the way we come at some of these questions are new, and so we have a really tough time finding curriculum that explains a lot of that. And so most of the other classes are developed here, and that's why we've kind of worked through some of these. But this Animate curriculum, it really is good. The videos are like 2 minutes and kind of gets you rolling, and then to start talking about this and discussing these in different ways. And so that's Animate Bible and Animate Faith. And then we've also got a core class of church history, which is basically after the Bible, how did we end up here, and how does that all fit together? And so those are our core classes. We've got two core classes every semester, and then a third one that's an elective, which is just other stuff. And so coming up, we'll be doing the Old Testament class. We'll be doing Animate Bible. I really encourage you, even if you feel like you totally got the Bible all, you know, like nailed down, I would still encourage you to go. It's probably a little bit different. So yeah, those are Sunday school classes. When you walk out the door, you'll get a little flyer of what the Sunday school classes are, a little bit of write-up. It's also on the website, and there's emails and all sorts of other stuff. If you have any questions, please come talk to me or contact any of the Sunday school teachers.
Cool. Thank you. What's that? Yeah, why don't we have the four of you that teach the core curriculum, why don't you stand up, Mandy and Ryan and John and Jeff, who is allegedly also on a cruise. John, you're out there. You're off screen even. I can't even see you. So those are the teachers, and you all know the work that they do, that do all this stuff, and so show them. So that's all the ways. I'm sure there's more, but those are many of the ways that we are trying to be as faithful as we can as we wander. There's a sense, though, and there has been this sense, and you've heard this from us, that something's got to give. Either we've got to figure out something here, or we've got to go elsewhere, and we've got to do something. And so there's a sense in which it feels like our future is going to get determined in the near future. And so preparing this week, I was thinking, again, to go back to the analogy of the people wandered, but then there came a point where they were ready to go into the promised land. And I was reflecting on that story from Scripture this week and thinking about the land and the idea, and I couldn't find anything else but this, is that there was nothing special about that particular land. There are places in the world that you can grow crops better than Palestine, and there are better places for raising sheep, and there's better places for growing grapes. In fact, I don't know of any good Jewish wines. But what was special about the land is that was the land that God wanted to do a work through them. That was the place where God said, you know, when we get into that land, that's where you're going to be a blessing to all people. And so wherever we go, it doesn't matter. Because wherever we are, that's where God wants to work through us. And so as we do that, there's some things as we look forward or out of this next year, there's a couple things. First of all, there's been a little bit of change over the last year in our leadership team and the ministry directors, but most of the team is still intact. And last year we came to you and we talked to you about our leadership covenant, which we had all signed there. And I'm just looking, some of those signatures are people not on the team because we haven't updated it yet. And in the next month, you can pray for our leadership team. We're going to go away on a retreat in October and really just to get away and to be quiet individually, but then also as a team to just say, in the quiet, when we slow ourselves down, do we discern the work of God? Is this where God is leading us? Is this where God wants us? And as individuals, then to recommit ourselves to leadership team. And there might be people on that team in the next month or so that we come to you all and say, hey, so-and-so just said that at this time of their life, they needed to step off this and they needed to step away from some of that kind of stuff because of other things. And so you can pray for that team in the coming month or so as we'll be doing that, and as there's obviously big decisions looming. And then I just want to say, you know, every season has its good things. And you all know that when we hired David, and it was first David and I on staff, and then we brought Emily on, and Mary, and then Beth, and then Ash, not all at the same time, people coming and going, that it's been good at every point. But I just want to say, for the benefit of all, I told Jennifer recently coming home that there is a camaraderie among our staff that we just haven't always had. And a part of it just logistics and how we work together and just personalities. We have more fun meeting together than we've ever had. I probably spend more time with staff than I ever have, in that every Monday we spend a good chunk of the day together. In the morning we spend together, and then the afternoon, Dustin and Jesse and I, because Ashley works half day, we are working on a book together and have great discussions together. And I'm just so... I'll get weepy again, but I just get so happy, and it's so good, and it's so, I enjoy my hours at work, and so we're in a good place. And as we work together, there's about four things right now, that are really at the forefront of our discussions. This is the things that we're thinking about and talking about and putting energy into. And if you came into my office right now, I think almost every one of these is on a whiteboard or a flip chart pasted to the wall, because it's the thing that's our leading edge. And the first one of those things is community life. If you've come into Imago, you know, or if you've gone, frankly, into any church anywhere, I think ever, the hardest part about coming to a church is, like, you'll learn the songs pretty quickly and you'll figure out where to take your kids. The hardest part is finding a way into a community to find your people. Because by nature of it, the people that are there already have their people. And so it's really hard to figure out, how do we find people that are coming in, and how do we find community for them, and how do we assist them in finding their community of people? If we think community is as important as it is, then how do we do that? And so when we hired Dustin, one of the things that we told him, the very top of his list, was to help us figure that out. And so he's going to talk a little bit about community. And so welcome, Dustin, to his first Vision Sunday. You're going to make me hug, aren't you?
Well, you were talking about our staff, so I'm a hugger. If any of you guys want a hug, just come up to me. You don't have to say anything. I don't have to know you. I will accept your hug readily. So I have this clipboard that I'm going to use later. But so I am here to solve all of the problems in the orange circle. Not really. But I'm really glad to be able to be here, and it's I love our church already, and feel like I'm meeting such quality people, and everyone's been so hospitable. So I feel like me being able to contribute to the community that's already happening makes me really happy. And so I think there's a lot of good things that are happening in our community. And I mean, the fact that it is its own circle, that we value community, and living deep in community is a great place to start. So I think it's always good to ask how we're doing in this area. Like, are people developing deep friendships? How are we doing at welcoming new people into our body? How well do we know each other? Are we really opening up about tough issues and really digging deep? And I know it's harder in our culture, because we're encouraged to be individualistic and on our phones and not really be present. And so I love that we're pushing against that tendency and digging deep into community. And so in general, I think we're doing really well. And I think we have ways that we can improve, of course, but I would give us a thumbs up. So I don't know what my job is. I don't know if there are any issues to solve. So I'm going to have to cut back to part-time or something. I don't know. No, I'm just joking. No, that was a joke. But, I mean, community is a sticky subject, because it isn't easy. It is so important. It's about relationships, and so it's a process. It takes time to develop. It takes commitment. And there's a lot of effort and energy and initiative that are built in that we can't, as a staff, do. I think our job is to create environments and to communicate opportunities and to do our best to lead. But it also takes, it's a two-way street. In any relationship, it takes initiative on all of our behalf. And so it isn't an easy thing. But one thing I love about Imago is I love that we have so many ways to connect. We don't have a small groups ministry per se, or like a very easy paved route. We have a variety of options for people to connect. And so I love that. Of course, if you've been around longer, you know what those things are. You know how to get involved. You know the people that you can walk up to on a Sunday and know their face and their story. And so it's easier if you've been around longer. And so I feel like one of the places that I really want to improve early on is, how do we communicate to newer people? How do we clarify the different options that people have to connect and to get involved? And so one way that that this is actually for everybody. The Supper's for Six, Charlie referenced. We have sign-up sheets after service. I hope all of you sign up. I think last year there was 140 people that participated. Actually, raise your hands if you've done it before. Supper's for Six. That's awesome. I love this. So I'm glad to be able to carry on that tradition. So Supper's for Six is exactly what it sounds like. It's dinner with six people. And so I've actually recruited about 20 host homes, and so that part's the hard part. So all you have to do is sign up on the sheet, put your name and phone number if you have any diet restrictions on there, and then I will have the hosts call you sometime within the next week or two, and then they will schedule time that meets with all six people that works with their schedules. So it's just a one-time thing, having dinner around a table. And Charlie mentioned, like, there's no special significance to the number six. It's just that most kitchens, six is a great number. Like, most tables can fit six. And six is also a great number to have a conversation, where you can have one conversation, because if you get bigger than that, then it's harder to have one conversation. You break up, and it just gets a little more tricky. So, and it has alliteration. So, Supper's for Six. So, I think there's actually two sign-up sheets. They're the same. I'll put one by the offering box, and then one is up on the front porch already. So, after service, don't forget, sign-up sheet. Jeff Keach actually told me this week they're going to be one of the host homes. He said he thinks it is the best way to get to know people around Imago. So that was Jeff Keach's plug. So there are some other ways to connect. A lot of what you've already heard today, the different leaders, different volunteer teams. If you connect over learning and conversation, the Sunday school class is a great place, or Eat, Drinks, and Orthodoxy, which will be on the handout that we'll give you after service. If you connect through serving, the Breakfast Club is a perfect place. Or if you connect through being on a team, there's plenty of volunteer teams like Genesis or the worship team to be involved. In this next season, which Charlie will talk more about, I think, but we'll probably have a lot of opportunities to work on our building. And so doing things, doing projects, keeping an eye out for events, that's a great way just to hang around people and cross-connect what you don't always get to see them. And then lastly, talk to me. We try and communicate through notes and announcements and Facebook, but if you ever have a question or you want me to point you in the right direction, I'm here to help. So that's it.
Thank you, Dustin. Three more things. I know it's hot, and I know we've gone long, but three more things. I planned for this service to be 2 hours. I don't know about you all, but that's what I planned for. So I think you've heard me say over the last couple weeks, and I mentioned it earlier, just the reality in my life. I'm 39 years old, and I think that I was talking to a friend recently, and we were saying, like, there was that season where you get out of college and everybody's getting married. Remember that one where you were just spending lots of money on weddings all the time? And then there's the one where people just keep having babies, and we are past that. But we're even with our circle of friends, that's kind of starting to be in the rearview mirror. What's sad and what feels so grown up and so gross is it feels like in my life it's the season to get divorced. That there's more people I know, more friends, and it's heartbreaking. And I know that some of you have journeyed through that, and you know, even if you were the one that made that choice, it's heartbreaking and it's hard. And we have a unique opportunity at our church that we have a lot of young marriages. It's like this. Like, I was thinking the best analogy I can think of is when you live in a house, you have to just keep up on the maintenance, right? Because what's a little crack in the wall, if you don't deal with it, it just gets worse. Or if you have a little leak at the sink and you don't deal with that little leak, well, then that starts rotting out your cabinet, which eventually rots out the floor. Like, it turns into a mess. And you got to take care of it while it's small. You got to keep tending to it. And what it seems like happens often in marriages is people don't tend to it. They don't pay attention, or they don't know what to do about the little leak and the little crack. And so they just kind of ignore it and they move on. And eventually that thing, like, rots the foundation, and it just can't be fixed at some point. And we all have experienced that, right? We all know our friends where you got to the where they finally got to the point where you knew there was a problem and there was just nothing you could do anymore. And I don't want to keep walking this valley if I can help it. And I don't want to see my friends, I don't want to see people that I did premarital for, that I stood at an altar with, I don't want to have to walk through that valley again. And I know it's going to happen, but if we can do anything we can to stop it or to help people to get to places of dealing with their stuff, we want to do whatever we can. So, here's our first stab at it. Beginning November 1st, we're going to try to have date night at Imago, all right? This is not going to be as weird as it sounds at first, all right? You don't have to go on a date to church, all right? The idea is this. I hear people say sometimes, well, you just need to have a date night. You need to have a date night. But I'll tell you, for Jennifer and I, in the years, especially when we had when the kids were younger, and one, finding a babysitter that wants to babysit four boys is a very small pool. Usually they have to be related to you, all right? And then you use guilt. And then frankly, for a lot of us to say we're going to go out for dinner, and then on top of that, we've got to pay just as much to have a sitter, that's easy for some people to say, and it's harder for some of us to do, right? And so we want to try to help that, and here's how this is going to roll, is that on November 1st, if you have kids, if you don't have kids, we want to make sure that you're welcome, and I think everybody that's married, if you can do it, you should be here, but you can drop off your kids before 6. At 6 o'clock, what we're going to do is I'm going to take the stuff that I do with couples in premarital and teach for 15 minutes, 20 minutes max. We will have you out the door at 6:20. I promise you that. If I'm in the middle of talking, I will stop and get you out the door at 6:20 so that you can go out to dinner. And if you can't do dinner, you can just take your spouse and go walk on Grandview. I just ask that you don't run errands and go grocery shopping. Go spend time on your relationship. And in that 15, 20 minutes, we will create discussion questions for you. Like, if you don't know what else to talk about when you're with each other without the kids, here's what we talked about, and here's some questions that you can talk about at dinner. So I'll tell you, the first one is going to be talking about, how do we assess the state of our marriage? How do we sit down with each other and say, how's it going with you? And listen to the other person, and how's it going with you? And we're going to give you words to go with that. And all we ask is you come back by 8 o'clock and pick up your kid. While you're gone, so far I think it's the Deans and the Dean boys and the Heights, the Christina, Dustin Heights, I was thinking about saying it wrong, I was going to say Christina and Ryan, but that's all kinds of weird, Christina and Dustin Height, we're going to watch your kids, which is mostly going to involve probably Dean boys wrestling with them, popcorn in a movie, and pizza, all right? And we'll work out food allergies and all that stuff if we need to, but we're just going to come and play here with them until 8 o'clock. And so that's date night at Imago, and we're going to put that out on November 1st for the first time on a Friday night. If it goes well, we will do it again and again and again as much as we can to serve marriages in the church. So that's one of the big things that we're really excited about. Two more. You all know, I'm going to be real quick with this one. You all know that for the last 2 years, I've been in an intentional formational community. I've gone to Chicago on retreats every quarter. I've spent 3 days on retreat with people talking about issues of spiritual practices. We want to try to move that to the church. And for you to do that, it costs a lot of money, and 3 days and 4 books per quarter and papers I had to write, it was pretty intensive. And so we are exploring new ways of doing a formation community here at Imago. And so beginning in January, we're recruiting a beta group. We're recruiting 8 to 10 people, men and women, to go through this experience with me. And it'll be a 24-hour retreat every quarter where we practice spiritual disciplines in community together. And we're hopeful that this becomes the first step in spiritual formation in our church. Sunday school classes is the first place where we start to think about God differently, or the idea of love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. If Sunday school classes are the mind, we want this to be the heart and soul. This is where we start learning what it means to live in relationship with God and with each other. And so we are going to begin this year to start that experience. And we're going to take a group of people and work through it. And if it works, we'll start another group after that. And so super excited about our first formation community, at least our beta group for that this year. This is the part in the talk where Steve Jobs pretends he's finished. And then he says, and one more thing. Yesterday morning, this slide really wasn't set. Last night, we finally got word that on October 6th, we're moving. We have never been able to get the deal done here. We've tried and we've put stuff out there, and we just have never been able to make the deal happen. and the deal, we're just miles apart, hundreds of thousands of dollars apart. And you all know, if you've been around this building at all, you know the price tag that goes with fixing this place and getting heat. Just getting air conditioning here is an expensive proposition. In September of last year, Parkview United Christian Church they just dwindled down to just a few people left, and they closed the doors. And so for the last several months, we've been in conversation with the denomination, and last night they approved a deal that we're moving over there for a year-long lease with an option to buy. And so you can clap. All right. I'll do the fun stuff, then I'll say some other things. That's a look at the sanctuary. Is it as pretty as this room? No. But in some ways, I'm more excited about that place. It fits us. It's not as deep as this. It only goes back about 10 pews, and then it spreads out like we used to be at the gateway, where we can kind of see each other better, and it'll be better for discussion. I told some of our folks, I was meh about it until we got to spend about 3 hours in it when Thursday afternoon, and dreaming and thinking and strategizing, and we're going to do this and this and this, and over the next couple weeks, we're going to need there's a lot of work. Here's a fun thing. We found just fun stuff in there, like a big Bible, and nothing brings out a scowl like a big Bible. Which leads to more scowling and studying, which leads to pounding the Bible, and then leads to judging. I told you, the staff has fun. I want to get off that screen, but I don't want to go to the next one. Just ignore the guy there. I'll try to work out my issues before I teach there. It's super, super bittersweet. I love doing weddings in this room. It's a beautiful room, and it makes me sad that I think that what will happen to this building is it's just going to rot, is what I think is going to happen to this church. And I pray that somehow, somewhere along the way, somebody is able to get it from the existing landlord and make it beautiful and be what it needs to be. But I told the landlord just recently, you can convince me all day long that a BMW is better than a Ford, but if I can only afford a Ford, it doesn't matter. And he can convince me all day long that this building is worth millions. And even if I agreed with him, which I don't, even if I agreed with him, we just can't do it. And so there's a lot of bittersweet about moving. And I'm sad for my family because the next month is going to be a lot of work. And we're going to have to ask you all for a lot of time and a lot of help. And get your painting clothes on, because the smell of 1974 needs painted out of that building as best as we can. You saw the pew color. The colors are just hideous. But that's stuff you can change. It, hey, it has air conditioning. Yeah. And so we're supposed to get keys hopefully by Thursday, and shortly after that you'll hear it on Facebook and Twitter and on our webpage about what we need and how we're going to get in there and all kinds of things. And it's just, there is the sweet part of it for me is the gears are going. Like, we didn't know that there was going to be enough parking, and yesterday I was talking to my dad about it, and he's like, well, I looked at the map and there's a sidewalk that runs from the church to the cemetery. Can you use their parking lot? And I was like, brilliant solution, Dad. And so on my list of things to do this week is to go introduce myself to the cemetery folks and see if we can work out a mutual beneficial parking arrangement to get more parking for us. And it's just fun when you start getting more people involved, like ideas just start happening. And so we're going to be asking a lot of you. And we don't know exactly the money yet, what money we want to hold back for a down payment, what money we want to use right now to get in. And we're having a meeting Wednesday night to talk through all those things. We might have to come back next week and say, hey, we need some funds for moving in. I don't know how to answer that yet. We're meeting on Wednesday night, and we'll figure that out. Lots of things are, I mean, seriously, Kevin sent the email last night at 6 o'clock or something to let us know that it was finally approved. And so we just found out. So, yeah, that's a big thing. Let me say one last bit, and then we'll be done, and we'll move to communion. One of the things that I think I'm finding to be more and more true of my life, part of what it means to be an adult and to grow up and have kids, is that I have to say yes and no a lot more. I have to say I'm going to do this thing and not that thing. And as a church, we have to do that. over the next year, we're going to have to say yes and no. Yes, we're going to do this thing. We're going to spend money here on the building, or we're not going to spend money. We're going to do this ministry or not. And we're going to look around our current context over there and say, what does this space remind me of? And it reminds me of like when the people go into the land, that's what the law was there for. The law was there to provide a place where you say yes and you say no, that this is what you do. So you don't have to worry about these things. You can do this thing. Jennifer and I were listening to an album from my favorite college band. They just released a new album. They're old now. And there's a lot of people haven't even heard of them. But there's this song that we've been listening to, and I told her, like, this is my favorite song.
Shame.
You can turn it down. I'm going to talk over the first part. And we were talking about how much I really like the song, and I've been listening to it a lot. You know, you get a new album, and you just listen. And I was thinking about this idea of yes and no, and it got to this chorus, and I'll let you listen to the chorus here in a second. I love the first two lines of this chorus. Go ahead and turn it up.
That your heart was braver than your will was strong. For every path you follow, there's another left behind. Every door you don't kick open, there's a million more to try. For everything you taught me, here's the one I learned the best. There is nothing but the moment, don't you waste it on.
Isn't that great? That for every door you don't kick open, there's a million more to try, and it requires us to say yes and to say no. And so we're going to be in that process hardcore. In some ways, I feel like for our leadership team, when we go on retreat, this is a big season of yes and no. We've been sitting for a long time doing this in leadership team meetings. And it's a season now where we get to start engaging again and start saying, if this is our promised land, if this is the space where God has brought us to do what we're doing, then how do we do it here? That's not just a call for the church, because that's something that each of us has to work out too. Today, my family is beginning an experiment. Last night, we talked with the boys about this, and we're beginning a Sabbath experience with our family. We're going to try this out. So what we're trying is that when we go home today, we're going to shut off our phones. And Caleb asked last night, like, do you mean really shut off the power? And I was like, yeah, big deal. We're really going to shut off the power on all our iPhones, all six of us. They don't have iPhones, iPods, and the iPad, and both computers. We're really going to shut off all the power. And the reason we're doing that is not because we're mean parents and not because we want them to sit in a corner all day, but we believe that when we shut off those things, then we can say yes to the things that we really want. We can say yes to playing pool basketball together, and we can say yes to playing games together, and we can say yes to being together as a family, and we can say yes to resting together. That's what Sabbath was always about. I always thought Sabbath was just a bunch of rules that were set down by the meanies so mom and dad could take a nap. And what I've been learning recently, I just read this. If you're looking for a book to read, I'll hand you my book on Sabbath. It's so good because it talks about Sabbath as a gift, because Sabbath forces you to say no. In the Jewish concept of Sabbath, you don't do Sabbath once you get to a place where you finally earned it. Sabbath starts at sundown on Friday night. Like it or not, it's there. And for our family, it starts when dad rolls into the garage. When I get home today, that's when Sabbath starts. It's done. It's when we go. And Sabbath is a gift then, because Sabbath gives you space to do the things you really want to do, the things that last forever. And so it was fun talking to the boys last night about what do we do on Sabbath? How does our family do Sabbath? And it might mean spending time with like our extended family or some of our friends that are as close as family, you know? And we were talking about who are those people that spending Sabbath with would be a gift, you know? And so we were talking through some of the things we might try and do and all those things. And we're all grown up, you know? And we've all got to say yes and no. Most of us don't have unlimited resources. We have to say yes and no about the things we buy and spend, because to say yes to this thing means that we don't get to say yes to this over here. And part of growing up and part of maturing is to start taking control of those things and saying, if I believe in this, then I'll say no to this thing so I can do that. And we're going to come asking. We're going to come asking for your time. We're going to ask you to say no to maybe some things you really want to do so that the church can, whatever the thing is that we need. And we're going to ask you for your money. We're going to ask you to say no to maybe some things you really want to do so that we can do together. And it's a somber season. There's excitement about moving into a new place, sure, and there's a lot of fun, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of laughs and a lot more stupid staff pictures as we move into the new building. But there's also this somber assessment from each one of you as we start asking about your life. Yes and no.